Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The evening wasn't a total disaster.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 6, Secrets and Lies. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. The secret is, it's actually Secrets and Lies.
It is Secrets and Lies, plural. Dave says, shrug, I've already pushed my microphone away. That's nobody's business. Thank you. Slice that together and no one will be any the wiser. Hello, listener.
True.
Welcome to another episode. We want to tell you, before we get into it, what's happening on the Patreon. There is no Again With This on Fridays. January has five of those, but next Friday, February 7th, we will be bringing you Again With This 226. We saved it for the eve of the Super Bowl. Let's watch James Vanderbeek in Varsity Blues, a movie that somehow I never saw at the time or since. This is going to be my very first time watching it.
Are you sure we didn't see that together?
I'm quite sure.
Okay. I mean, that seems wrong. It seems like the universe shouldn't have allowed that, but it is correcting it now.
Yes.
And we hope you will join us.
Mm-hmm.
And although there is no Again With This on Friday, this Thursday, January 30th, we will be bringing you our latest Again With Them, covering the remaining January episodes of 90210 OMG that we haven't already discussed a few weeks ago. How much discussion time will be taken up by digestive issues? What new foods has Amy's doctor forbidden her from eating? How many episodes will one blonde or the other or both skip out on? Only our Patreon high rollers at the $5 level and up will know. So kick up your pledge and you'll get the latest installment and all the Again With Them archives dating back to 2020. If you can believe it, we sometimes can't. Please do it. Join us again with this podcast.com/club. And whatever you do, do not listen to 90210 OMG yourselves. That is what the money is for.
Do not do that. But I'll say this. This morning, I was feeling some distress and thought, oh no, Amy thought something uncharitable about me. And this is what happened. And only our listeners will know what that means. Did she think she wanted to kill me? No, because she does not think that, even in her own mind, for fear of prosecution. But she thinks something else, and here we are. Also, Varsity Blues is on Paramount Plus, and we will link that in the show notes as well. Let's get into this episode. First of all, hell no to the title. I know the phrase obviously predated the Mike Lee movie, but this episode didn't, and don't rip it off. Please. It's a very good movie.
Yeah. Do not touch the hem of that garment ever.
No. And speaking of Mike Lee, where is Hard Truths, Alamo Austin? Get it out there. What the hell? Mm. Our B plot is, how real was Andy's fling with Rob? And we're going to do a content warning here for talk of sexual assaults in this plot line. We start it with exposition about Paisley and or Joey suggesting that the Potters turn their house into a bed and breakfast with their insurance settlement from the burned down ice house. And they also exposit that Paisley's dad arranged for the police auxiliary to help with construction. Firefighters, I would trust to do this. Cops, no, by the
way. Yeah, no, certainly not.
If you will remember, Joey formerly slept in the living room of this dwelling, so they have built an addition. I hope there's a bedroom for her in it. When Bessie takes off, Paisley can tell Joey's worried, and she admits that because this project is going to eat a lot of the settlement, she hopes it works out. Paisley is confident and also holding his cup wrong. You can see in the visual aids. Sarah's more generous with him than with others. But... Joey says it has to work because she can't go back to the marina. Pacey asks, whatever happened with that creep? And it's a little surprising to get a hint that they discussed Rob off screen in general, but that nothing Joey said made Pacey want to go beat him up. But stand by. Joey decorously gives an abridged version of her firing, leaving out Andy's name. But of course, Pacey wants to know what girl Joey had tried to warn about Rob's piggishness, and she lies that it's no one he knows. Pacey tells her that she sucks at lying and repeats the question, and when Joey hesitates, Pacey figures it all out. Joey wasn't going to tell him and says it won't last because Andy's too smart to fall for Rob's bullshit, but Pacey's like, whatever makes her happy, and wanders away. And sometime later, Andy joins Joey and Pacey in the cafeteria. Pacey immediately leaves with fake homework, and when he's gone, Andy guesses Joey told him about Rob, and Joey coldly says it slipped out over breakfast, reluctantly explaining why they were together at that time and how much is riding on the addition that Pacey is helping with. Andy starts to say it wasn't her fault that Joey got fired and that even if it was, Joey can't stay mad at her forever. She doesn't know what she and Rob are, but she can't help liking him. And Joey promises a big fat I told you so is coming. More than that. Later still, Joey cleans the floor at home and bitches that it's just like Cops to take off when the going gets tough. ACAB includes the ones helping you revive your small business, I guess. She and Pacey snark back and forth about his suggestion that they name the addition the Pacey J. Witter Wing until Bessie comes in with the phone. Whoever is calling, she is upset. And after a moment, a tearful Andy gets on and asks for help. And after the commercial, Pacey and Joey have found Andy crouching outside a huge house with a party underway. She initially says she doesn't want to talk about what happened, but when they press her, clip two.
We were upstairs in the bedroom. And we were just kissing. And then you started trying to. And I kept saying no, and he kept trying, and then I managed to get away before anything else happened, and that's when I came down, and I called Joey, and can we just go now, please?
Where is he?
Don't worry about
it. Is he in there?
Casey, let's just go.
I'm not leaving until I talk to that bastard.
He is already glaring up a storm, and though Andy yelps at Pacey, he ignores her. Quickly finds Rob on the patio, and clip three.
Rob, you and Andy, right?
What the hell did you do,
man? That's why she's outside bawling her eyes out for nothing.
Where
right?
is she?
Not anywhere near her. If you so much as touch her again, I am going to nail you to a cross.
Wait a minute. Wait, I didn't even lay a hand on
her. Oh, hey, save it for the jokes, Logan, huh?
He's very well cast for this type of a person.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I never laid a hand on her versus a dickish claim that she wanted whatever he did is, you know, noteworthy. I'll just leave it there for now.
Yeah.
Back at the Potter house, Joey tells Andy she has to go to the police station tonight. And Andy repeats talking points we've all heard a million times on screen and depressingly probably in life. Clip four.
It's not like he actually did anything.
Well, then why don't you stay here? I mean, I really don't think you should be alone tonight.
Thanks, but I can't.
I can take care of this, John.
You sure?
Yeah.
So then, Pacey and Andy are at his boat as he assembles a makeshift bed, and she calls his true love sign ironic. He figured since it doesn't exist, he would try creating it for himself, and they continue, clip five.
I guess I just wanted to show you that I've been okay since we ended things. I've found a way to turn what's been killing me into something potentially beautiful.
I haven't, Pacey. I'm not over you.
You will be, McPhee.
See, even that, just you calling me by my last name. Do you know how long I've waited to hear that?
See, you've been through a lot tonight, Annie. Let's not go there, huh?
If it took what happened tonight to bring us together, then so be it.
We're not together. I mean, I'm here for you, but we're not together.
If we're not together, then I'm not sitting beside you. staring into your eyes and kissing you.
Well, I mean, you're not kissing him because she leans in and he stops her before they connect, says they can't for a lot of reasons. But nevertheless, she persists. Clip six.
I'm not asking you what we can't do, Pacey. I'm asking you what you want to do.
I want to know that you're okay. That's all that matters to me now.
That's a shame because you still matter to me in every way. I want to be with you, Pacey.
I know that's how you're feeling right now, but tomorrow could be an entirely different story.
I'm not talking about tomorrow. I'm talking about right now, tonight. You and me together under the stars, just like it used to be. I'm talking about a kiss. That's all I'm asking. Don't you want to?
I mean, this whole scene is just so divorced from how actual teenagers would think or talk about this situation. It's just wild. And I, you know, continue to motion to overturn Andy's heel turn because it's just bad.
Yeah, this storyline really sucks. we'll get into it, but
ugly.
They do end up kissing. She had an objective. She achieved it. That at least is Andy behavior. And the next morning when Pacey drops Andy off at home, she thanks him for taking care of her. And then Andy's out all over him. Clip seven.
I just want to say, for the record, about last night, whatever did or did not happen between us happened for a reason. And I, for one, am 100% okay with it. And, you know, wherever it may lead, whatever new status may result, Andy, it's totally... I'm rambling.
Yeah.
Well, it's an awkward moment, Pacey, and I'm scared. And in scared moments, I ramble. I mean, some people do that sometimes. Sometimes they even ramble when they're...
Andy?
Rambling again. Right. I guess I just want to know that you're feeling what I'm feeling.
I am.
It makes me so happy.
Oh.
We're supposed to think they slept together, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. When she leaves, despite what he said, Pacey doesn't look like it makes him so happy or any amount of happy.
No.
Over to the Potter house, Joey opens the door to Rob looking terrified. Clip eight.
Didn't you read the sign? No known sex offenders within 200 yards of my property.
I didn't do it.
Not bad. You could use a little work on the delivery, however. I suggest a less forceful interpretation.
Joey, please, just tell me. Tell me that she hasn't gone to the police.
You touch me again, and I will scream faster than you can say William Kennedy Smith. You got it?
Look, Joey, she was the one that wanted to go upstairs, okay? She practically dragged me up to that room. And when we started kissing, I swear she just freaked out.
You know what, Rob? You do not have a lot of credibility with me right now.
Fine, I admit it, okay? But there is a difference between an inappropriate workplace flirtation and some...
And sexual assault? You draw your own line in the sand, Rob. They are both against the law.
I have never forced myself on anyone.
If you say so.
You know, it's no secret that she's unstable. No secret that she spent some time in a mental hospital.
I'm going to pretend that you never said that.
Then why would she do this, huh? That's all I want. For what possible reason?
There's a couple arm grabs in that whole sequence that you can see in the visual aids. This is really where it starts to suck hard, because false reports are statistically insignificant, yet pop culture loves presenting attempted both sides stories that...
Mm-hmm.
Make people who don't know better think that women, as the phrase goes, cry rape frequently, and that's not true. And this sucks.
Yeah.
That Dawson's Creek is doing it.
Yeah, it does. And to also have him come back around to be like, well, there's a difference between an inappropriate workplace flirtation, like, oh, so you admit that it was inappropriate.
Right.
Like, I don't actually care if this guy gets ground up in the gears of whatever machinations we're supposed to think Andy is or is not doing, but If he knew it was wrong, why did he keep doing it? Oh, that's right. Because he can. That's
right.
Why guys like that do stuff like that. Like, I know they're trying to be on Pacey's side, but then they're just throwing all the women characters on the show under the bus.
Yes.
And us as well, honestly.
Yes, of course. Yes, absolutely. The fact that he would in that moment bring up like, well, everyone knows she's been in a mental hospital. It's like, okay, so either the show is saying she's doing what it seems like she's doing because she's mentally unwell or has been, or because she's like an actual villain out to ruin someone's life with full manipulation to get Pacey back.
Right.
They're both bad.
But since this is Dawson's Creek and not a fucking Joker origin story,
right,
chapter 88, then by you bringing it up, you're implying that she wasn't able to give consent because she's ill. So, hey, show, you don't really get to do this and act like it's okay.
So Joey slams the door on Rob, but looks less certain about everything. And that night, she's doing dinner prep at Andy's when she hesitantly asks if Andy has told her dad what happened. Andy, seeming completely unconcerned, shrugs that she would only upset him and it's not like anything cataclysmic happened. Joey gasps that Rob could have hurt her, but Andy says maybe she overreacted, and Joey gives a tremendous "this bitch" face before asking if Andy thinks she overreacted. Andy says she didn't cry wolf, if that's what Joey means, and wearily, Joey tells Andy about Rob's visit. Andy's disgusted that Joey believes that scum. Joey didn't say she did. Andy doesn't know why Joey is there then. Joey wanted to make sure they were doing the right thing because she regrets not having reported what Rob did to her, since it could have potentially prevented all of this. And when Joey directs her back to the boiling pasta pot, Andy muses, clip 9.
Maybe all of this happened for a reason. I mean, maybe something good came out of it.
What do you mean?
As of last night, Pacey and I are back together. And I can't tell you how happy I am, because now everything can just go back to the way it was.
Oof.
Yeah. Oof. Brr.
So later, Andy, acting as if, brings a basket to the boathouse where Pacey is sanding part of the boat. Pacey is immediately guarded with Andy, but she either pretends or actually doesn't notice as she unpacks a skipper's hat and a pair of her dad's old boat shoes. And admittedly, I have never been to Cape Cod. I feel like boat shoes are something that a lifer would already have at least one pair of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
So the choice to leave him in the dumb skipper's hat during the next speech is a bad one, because apparently he's been doing some thinking. Clip 10.
You know, to be honest, I'm really starting to wonder whether I'm ever going to finish her at all.
Why do you say that?
Well, because sometimes it's harder to rebuild something than it is to just start from scratch.
Why?
That picture that you have in your mind of the way something was, it's never going to be that way again.
Yeah, but it could be better.
Yeah, it could be. It's depending on how badly damaged it was in the first place.
How badly damaged was it?
It was pretty much totaled.
I don't get it.
I mean, yeah. They're trying to also give these actors something to, like, they can't get Pacey and Joey together yet. Fine. Mm-hmm. They're trying to give these actors something to do with the material. Mm-hmm. Fine. They're trying to add some, like, plot terrain. But between this and the extremely ill-advised, like, whatever happened to Baby Jane styling that they're doing on Meredith Monroe this season, which I think is supposed to make her look younger, but is having the exact mutton dressed as lamb opposite effect. It's just like,
oh,
all of this is really, it's just really unfair to Meredith Monroe, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. So Andy tearfully asks if they can just be direct, and then maybe wishes that she hadn't when Pacey says they made a mistake last night. She yips that they did nothing, but clip 11.
All I can tell you is how it made me feel.
How?
Like I went against what I know is right.
That's funny because today is actually the first day that I felt really happy since I left the hospital.
That is funny.
No, it's really not at all. Yikes.
Well, it's funny, peculiar. And well, that's actually sort of ironic since, you know, she could have just not cheated on you, but here the writers are complicating things.
Yeah. Anyway, they go on. Clip 12.
You know, there used to be a time when you and I were so in sync in everything that we did. Just connected. And look at us now. We have the opposite reaction to the exact same event.
Pacey, please don't do this. Not now. Don't break up with me.
I never wanted to break up with you, Andy. Never. I mean, all those months just waiting, secretly hoping.
You're just punishing me. That's what this is about, and you just need to stop being angry with me.
I'm not punishing you, Andy. Right, punishment implies that you did something wrong.
I slept with another guy 6 months ago. I knew it was wrong when I did it. I keep trying to tell you this and make you understand, and how many times do I have to say it?
Andy, if you wanted to sleep with him, if even just for a second, then maybe it wasn't wrong. Maybe that was just your heart's way of telling you that I'm not the one.
Oh, your heart's fucked up, Ben. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also not how teenagers talk, but God bless Josh Jackson. He almost puts it over.
He does. He adds that his heart is telling him Andy's not the one. She sobs that he can't mean it. He says he's sorry, but she flinches away from him and takes off and apparently goes straight to Joey's to yell at her for being a bad friend and talking behind her back. Clip 13.
I haven't even talked to Pacey since you guys dropped me off.
And I'm supposed to believe that?
Well, it's the truth.
Oh, okay, so it's just a coincidence that 1 minute we're together and the next he never wants to see me again.
When did this happen?
Tonight. An hour ago, right after you went and told him that I made up the entire story about Rob just to get him back.
Look, okay, Andy, I admit, it did cross my mind. But I didn't believe it, not for a minute.
Is that right?
Look, I know you. I know that you're a good person. You would never do anything so hurtful and plainly wrong.
Wrong season.
I left in the crickets because they were really doing a good job in that long silence after.
They were. They were.
Because she sure seems like she did. Or, you know, it's somewhere enough in the middle that she feels guilty about it. But again, not to be definitive about this is another way. This plot line is very shitty. We don't have to belabor it. I assume our listeners agree. Apparently, this flips a switch and Andy tells Joey she has no idea what Andy is capable of when she sets her sights on something she wants. It's like she has blinders on and everything else fades away. Seeming scared, Joey asks what she's talking about. Andy says she loves and needs Pacey and she doesn't know what the truth is anymore. Again, sucks. Be definitive. Also, don't do this at all.
Yeah. Also, pay angry and or Jack McPhee to be in these episodes so that they can be like, seems like a retitration of meds perhaps is in order.
Joey sits next to Andy and puts her arm around her. To me, it seemed like Joey was forcing herself to do it. But Sarah, you liked it. You put in the visual aids that you wanted to see more friend moments between the girls. I do, too. I just don't know if this is it.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with you, actually. Joey looked frightened for, you know, there could be any number of reasons in her position. I think I would be like, I think my friend is maybe struggling with some chemical things, it seems like, and emotional things. But, you know, I still want to see more moments like that where they're not just sort of like storming over to each other's porches, declaiming, and then storming off. Like, just, I don't know, try to be each other's friends the way normal people are. And when the show actually bothers to do that, I'd like to compliment it for same.
I agree with that. It would also be especially nice if one of the scenes that they ever had being about being friends with each other wasn't about a boy. But, yeah, you know, even shows about grown-up girls don't manage that very well sometimes.
Yeah.
And somewhere else, Pacey works away at the true love in case we don't get it. But I think we do. So that's it for that plot line.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Finally, we have our A plot. Jen notches a win while Gail takes a loss. We open with some recaps of events from two episodes ago. Jen commenting that her recent homecoming queen win gives her one more thing in common with her mother. Mrs. Lindley was Miss Cape Cod and graduated from pageant queen to society lady. Jen feels like she has sold her soul. Dawson tells her not to beat herself up, and Jen says that that tendency is another character flaw she got from her mom. Dawson thinks she won homecoming queen because she's different. Jen thinks it's because she's blonde and fills out her sweater, which is not even how her mother would have put it at her age. That's from, like, Grams's time.
I know.
Although, talking about that on this particular day when my smaller dog is filling out a sweater is, you know, puts it all in a different light, I'll say.
Yeah.
It's gold, guys. Dawson concedes that, but clip 14.
When kids voted for you, they voted for an outsider, you know? Provocateur, messiah to lead them from the mainstream.
Wow.
Wow. No. They voted for the head cheerleader. Don't over-index this shit. It's high school kids like you.
And if he's throwing messiah around like that, maybe Dawson really did need Grams to identify a Jesus in the last episode.
Yeah. I mean,
relax.
Oh my God. And there's also so many like Southern things about this that it's like, not that there wasn't a Miss Cape Cod, I have no idea, but it just isn't the same kind of waspy. It's different.
Right.
Is A, and B, if you don't want to be the homecoming queen, just don't be that. If you don't want to be the head cheerleader, stop going to practice, stop wearing the uniform. Like,
yeah, well, that she at least did, but you know.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway,
I mean, why is this still a story? Anyway, here we all are, I guess.
Mr. Milo then interrupts them to introduce Jen to a half century's worth of past homecoming queens as Jen looks terrified. And then shoving through the crowd without any poise is Constance Freckling of the Mayflower Frecklings and famous freckling candy. Terrible name. I don't want to think about my candy freckling.
No. No.
She is apparently the oldest living homecoming queen and is played by legendary hates that guy, Kay Callan. Jen tries to hold it together as Constance shows her the secret handshake, because the show with the fucking handshakes all the time, and welcomes her to the club. When Constance says she's heard all about her, Jen's concern tips into alarm. And after school, Dawson comes home calling for Mitch and is shocked to see Gail in the kitchen. After a hug, he asks why she's back, and Mitch answers, it is the homecoming queen gala. As Gail explains the event to Dawson, something we will later find out is annual, and which Dawson would therefore know about from all the other times Gail has gone, Mitch looks absolutely enraptured by Gail, but not so much that he disputes her claim of having won her title in the late 70s. Mitch and Gail gaze at each other until Dawson says Jen is planning the gala. And if all of the past homecoming queens are already in town, the gala should be planned? Like, am I nuts? Gail is shocked to hear that Jen's the newest homecoming queen, but happy that at least it'll be a fun night for her and her escort, Dawson. And the spell is broken for Mitch as he realizes that she didn't even consider him. And Gail notes his wounded look before he shambles off. And then Jen is rolling up to Constance's house and a note apparently telling her to let herself in. Jen looks around, ending up at a gown under construction. Constance enters with tea and orders Jen not to slouch. Jen hasn't even absorbed that before Constance starts talking about the dress. She makes one for the gala every year until Jen interrupts to try to talk about that. When she calls her Mrs. Freckling, Constance says she is Miss Freckling and looks aghast that Jen didn't know she never married, which might be fair because someone like that would probably be a local celebrity. But then they both hear a crash upstairs. It is Hank, Constance's handy boy. Isn't probably supposed to sound dirty, but does.
Sure does.
He is on the roof hanging twinkle lights. Jen blows past that and tries to get out of the obligations that have been imposed on her. Clip 15.
I hope that you don't mind, but it's just that I've been through all this before with my mother. And she was constantly trying to turn me into a debutante. It's just not really my thing.
Oh, but I do mind. You have a responsibility, young lady, as the newly crowned queen, to help me host this event.
But I never asked for any of this.
Nor did I ask for you, Jennifer. Most girls who walk through this door are pleased as punch to be here. They're sweet, upstanding, enthusiastic girls who relish the chance to be role models. They tend to stand up straight, comb their hair, and wear brassieres.
I mean, someone had to say it. I'm sorry, it's this old bag, but still. Jen trudges out just in time to see Hank, the handy boy, fall off the roof, pursued by bees, and grabs Jen's hand to hide in a greenhouse. And in the episode, we return to these two after the scene where Pacey punches Rob, which is during a party in full swing. So I guess they've been hiding in the greenhouse for like 4 hours by the time we come back to them. Just saying.
Mega day.
Jen has a gala to plan, I thought, but she's moved by all the beauty around her. And Henry says there are over 200 plants in there. He even knows their Latin names. The first one he cites ends in Virginalis, and she cracks up. So even though he's only 15, which one of them is really the immature one, Jen? They go on. Clip 16.
Sometimes they get a little suggestive with the names.
Okay, give me another one.
Okay. Polystachia pubescens or Vanda vaginatum.
Oh! Is it hot in here or did you just make me blush?
Oh.
Relax, Henry. It's going to take a lot more than a flower to offend me.
Yes, we get it. You're the most worldly. Ugh. So
well,
tired.
There's that, but I also want to tell the editor, when one of your actors is this much of a mushmouth, turn down the bedding music because there was a pubescence in there somewhere that we could barely hear.
Yeah.
But we're not done. A cut suggests more time passing before Jen asks how Henry learned this stuff, of course, from Constance. Jen asks what her deal is, essentially calling her uptight, but Henry says she's just sad and lonely and he thinks he is her best friend. Jen doesn't know which of them to feel sorrier for, and when he droops, she says, clip 17.
Henry, we're going to have to toughen you up. You keep wearing your heart on your sleeve like that, and you're going to bleed to death.
It's not me, it's her. You have no idea how much she was looking forward to meeting you.
She was?
I told her all about you. See, the thing is, she has exactly two events on her social calendar. The WOC in Miami every spring.
The WOC?
The World Orchid Conference. And in the fall, the Homecoming Queen Gala. It's what she lives for. Without them, she's got nothing at all.
Okay. Like, but she has all that candy money.
Right. Presumably she would be doing some kind of philanthropy with it, I would think.
Yeah. Go to the mainland and buy yourself a nice husband. Why not?
Yeah. So sometime later still, Jen is holding Henry's hand with both of hers as he walks her back into Constance, who is working on her gown and unresponsive since, as Henry explained, she turned off her hearing aid. He startles her with a tap on the back and it reintroduces Jen, who nicely asks if they can start over. Constance comments that Henry is persuasive when he wants to be, and if Henry likes her, Jen can't be all bad. Jen says she was thinking the same about her, so party planning is on. Jen wants to start with the entertainment, and clip 18.
Now, since it's my house, there are some rules.
Surprise, surprise.
No mimes, no magicians, no Barry Manilow, no Elvis lookalikes, no motivational speakers, no comedy troupes, no breakdancing, no gangster rap, no animal tricks.
Okay, no, nothing that you might possibly see on Letterman.
What's Letterman?
How does a string quartet playing Mozart strike you?
Perfect.
Okay, I'll split the difference.
I'm sure you will.
Oh, and there's one more thing.
What's that?
Well, he doesn't know it yet, but Hank here is going as my date.
Oh, now who's just assuming that a date is happening without actually asking? Jen?
Yeah.
Rude.
And what is the purpose of the... I mean, I agree that Michael Pitt is actually the most charming that he's been in this episode. You'll mm-hmm. see him visually. It's like he has this one moment where he's beaming that you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And you actually just smile and act normal. I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're doing here and what is being done with you. But, I mean, the way that this subplot unfolds with the two of them over the rest of the episode, like, are you just using his infatuation with you to suck up to her?
Yes.
So that then you can embarrass her with what you think is scandalous entertainment, which is extremely patronizing and mm-hmm. not being a good ally? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, the, you know, what would you think of a string quartet? That sounds lovely. Or I think that sounds lovely. Of course you do. Shut up.
Yeah, fuck you.
If you're not going to do it,
just
bring
do the easiest thing.
Right.
Get the string quartet's number, call them, tell them to come there. They're expecting your call. Don't make work for yourself with this shit.
No, but that said, I do want to know what happened the year that made Constance have to add no mimes to the list.
I mean, most of that list, I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the next night, it's the gala that Jen started planning 20 hours ago, but I guess she's a natural because we pan over to Constance standing in the middle of her dining room, nodding splendid to herself. And on the other side of the room, Dawson wonders where Jen is. Gail, looking fabulous as always in formal wear, I will say, sees Marilyn, some bitch she hates, walk in and does a terrible job avoiding them. She's like, oh, there they are. I haven't talked to them in ages. And then they like walk straight for them. Like, we need to do a little more choreography of the room to make that make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, clip 19.
I heard all about Philadelphia.
I'm sure you did. Excuse us. We were just going to get a drink.
Actually, I'm quite proud of my mom.
Oh, we all are. Even if Philadelphia didn't quite agree with her. Honestly, I think it's perfectly absurd to fire an anchor because the public felt she was too old to identify with. You wouldn't hear them saying that about Diane Sawyer.
Gail, I speak for the whole county when I say you'd be welcome back on our airwaves anytime.
Thank you, Neil.
Okay.
Yeah, guess they don't have contract law in Pennsylvania?
Or okay. Age discrimination statutes? You know, mm-hmm. like this is a lawsuit. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Also, assuming that Gail is Mary Margaret Humes's age, she's 45.
Like, yeah, like, please. And in this scene, she is wearing a strapless gown and looks flawless.
She does.
Please.
But I also don't know why, given this, she wouldn't just skip the event.
Yeah.
Especially if she hasn't told Dawson yet. Elsewhere, Jen enters with Henry and describing those overdone Susie and the Henrys neo-goth looks is behind my verbal capacity. You're going to just have to go to the visual aids where they are captured from every angle. Sarah, do you want to take a stab at describing them verbally?
Not really. It's just trying extremely hard and is of a piece with all of this, like, you know, Jen iconoclast. Uh-huh. Thing that they're trying to do and that Michelle Williams is trying to make palatable, but it's just not working. Mm-hmm. Henry, meanwhile, is wearing a pirate. It's not even a shirt. It's like an apron.
Mm-hmm.
It's like someone strangled a boa and stuffed it in a sack. Like it's very bad and rude and dumb and dated. It's terrible. Go to yes. the visual aids.
The cuffs, the frilly cuffs. I just can't. Can't take it.
No. No.
So Constance gasps that Jen is late, the entertainment's not there, and her outfit is not appropriate, and she's definitely right about the last one. She orders them both to go home and change, gasping that she can understand why Jen would make this a travesty, but doesn't know why Henry went along with it. Jen says Constance hasn't seen anything yet. So cue four drag queens entering and bitching about the heat. They are the entertainment, and nonconformity is fine, but if you think these institutions are dumb, as we have already said, just don't participate and skip shitting on other people's fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But since Jen has decided to make this night about herself, clip 20.
Please help me in welcoming the awesome talents of Amanda Reckonwith, Summer Clearance, Megan Whoopi, and Miss Christianity. Danger is
hiding. Amanda Reckonwith is a great name. Terrible lip syncer, though. Really half-assed.
Yeah. And the show couldn't even get the rights to It's Raining Men, obviously, because, well.
Yep.
Okay, guys.
So when Jen rejoins him, Henry says he has a crush on Miss Christianity, who is for sure the fishiest one. You can see her in the visual aids, and that Constance is going to kill him. Jen thinks that on some level, Constance gets it. Homecoming queens and drag queens are both just people dressing up, playing a role. And then she makes him get up to dance with queens, and Michael Pitt has more rhythm than I expected. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm.
Gail, sitting next to Dawson, is delighted, so I guess they just put a pin in her getting fired. We're not going to get that back to that for a while. See, maybe it's next to the pin in Dawson's story about Jen's half-sister, because that doesn't come up in this episode at all.
No, it doesn't.
Constance's face is disapproving when the camera pans down. She's tapping her foot. And when we return to the party sometime later, a conga line has assembled and Constance is telling Jen the night wasn't a total disaster. Jen gently says she owes Constance an apology. Constance doesn't know what for, other than the obvious. Jen says she intended to shock Constance, but clip 21.
For the first time, I was able to see past the cliche and I actually enjoyed being a homecoming queen.
Okay, you know, you didn't have to say the part about the cliche, and maybe you are also a cliche being this showy about how much you don't care about any of this. Just a thought.
Yeah. Also, that's not an apology.
No, it's not at all. Great point. Constance brings up Hank and becomes the 100th person to tell Jen that he adores her. Jen says it's just a harmless crush, but Constance disagrees. Clip 22.
It's more than that. He talks about you nonstop. Your presence in his life has awakened him somehow. It's quite special. Though my concern is the sentiment's not mutual.
That would be correct.
I had a beau once. Heir to a mattress fortune. Beautiful man. I was 17. We courted. He asked me to marry him. I remember it like yesterday. He took off his hat, got down on one knee. It was at his mother's graveside on the anniversary of her death.
What, he proposed to you at a cemetery?
Looking back, I should have run from there screaming like a woman from a burning house, but...
But you didn't.
No, I didn't. But the wedding never happened anyway. He led me on, Jennifer. Played me for a fool. And then he ran off to California with the girl who sold him his Cadillac.
Okay,
That's a pretty good line.
Yeah, it is, but also a girl sold a Cadillac when Constance was 17, like... 70 years ago. Like,
yeah,
she sounds cool. Sorry about Constance's love life, but anyway, obviously Constance's point is that if Jen breaks Henry's heart too badly, he might never recover. And then Jen is with Henry back in the greenhouse looking at one of Constance's most special orchids. He leans in to kiss Jen, but she stops him. He thought they were having fun. She says they are, but not like that. He reminds her that she asked him to this thing. She says it's part of becoming friends, which if she really thinks that is just as cruel as the bomb pop in the last episode. Like, you know what you are doing.
Yeah.
It's mean. Henry says he thinks he's in love with her, and she laughs in his face, saying that he's not. He doesn't even know her, but he insists he really means it. Jen wishes it were that simple. He says the age difference between them is nothing, but she doesn't agree. Clip 23.
Do you know how much is going to happen to you in the next 2 years if you do them right? Your heart is going to swell and break 100 times before you turn 16.
And how does that make me any less ready for you now? I can still care about you more than anyone ever has.
No offense, but that's not saying much.
Then give me a shot. What do you have to lose?
Listen, Henry, what you need right now is somebody who can not only understand what you're going through, but who can also go through it with you. Believe me, everything that you haven't done, I have.
Except fall in love. I haven't done that. Wants you to have someone. But you don't. Which leads me to believe that everything you think you know about love is questionable. And as long as it is, you can't tell me I'm not the one for you.
Henry, what you need to know about me, and it's something that I'm just beginning to understand, is that until I can look at myself without judgment or condemnation, I'm not ready for anyone, let alone you.
I mean, get fuck out of here with all of this, truly. Like, I think first of all, this is not how teenagers speak to each other. Second of all, she's 17, not 37. Settle down.
I think she's only 16.
Yeah. Not that the show would even care about that, apparently. Mm-hmm. See season one.
Right.
And Tamara. But also, like, if you're not attracted to him, just say that, act mm-hmm. like it, and stop strolling past him with half a fucking frozen treat in your face hole when you know the effect that that's going to have.
Yes. If the issue is I'm still working on myself and that's why I'm not dating anyone and it's not about you, then it makes the ways that she's messing with him even crueler.
Like, what the hell? Did Kerr Smith just have tonsillitis? Like, I just don't... I mean, I understand that they're not going to date, but like this mm-hmm. would seem to be the ideal solution for her. I don't want to date, but I need a date.
Right.
But he's not even in the episode. So. Right.
So Henry reminds Jen of what she just said about his heart breaking 100 times, because there goes number one. Back inside, Dawson and Gail have finally gotten around to talking about her getting fired. She didn't know how to tell a son she's teaching to dream that she failed at her own. She didn't fail. The station failed her, and she should sue them for age discrimination, like I said. If the issue was she got fired over Dawson's bad story where the lighting was terrible, that's a different story, and I would support it.
Yeah, same.
But not even Dawson thinks that she failed or that she looks old. And, you know, he's an idiot. So he asks her about coming home. She has reasons not to race back to Capeside. Dawson doesn't want to get between her and Mitch. She guesses Dawson thinks that she should talk to Mitch, which, like, yes, you're supposed to be co-parenting. Now there's no reason for you to be sticking Mitch with Dawson 100% of the time. But what Dawson actually says is that she could use a friend like Mitch right now. Gail says they have too much history. Dawson thinks there's no reason she couldn't lean on Mitch a little, and she agrees. And Jen returns to the party where Constance is having a kiki with the drag queens and wearing one of their crowns, which is, you know, fine. For that one shot, it's worth it, I guess.
I guess.
Henry and his dumb outfit wander the town, his cuffs dragging on the ground. And Gail and Mitch reconnect on the porch and nobody cares. And that's the episode. Let's close up by naming our MVP. You know, I don't want to give Constance much credit, but she did tell Jen to wear a bra and she was right to say it.
Mm-hmm. Jack, for getting to skip this entire episode. Good job, Christmas agent, I guess.
Least a valuable player. The writers for doing this to Andy.
The Philadelphia affiliate. What the fuck, dude? HR much?
For real. This beautiful lady. Give her back her job, you jerks.
Mm-hmm.
Next time on Our Job, again with this, Andy is overcompensating as head hall monitor in charge. Jen and Pacey are considering a Friends Plus arrangement. That's right, I said Jen and Pacey. I forgot about this, and hopefully we'll forget about it again very soon. And Dawson is directing a little something we like to call the Nostril Flare Bitch Project. Speaking of horror stories, please check out our visual aids. That's the important screenshots and GIFs from this and every other episode of the podcast. There it again with this podcast.com. That is also where you can find the entire archive of episodes of Again With This, including 90210 and Melrose Place. That's again with this podcast.com/subscribe. I am overly optimistic, boat warming gift, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is disappointed greenhouse tour guide, Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, was pretty much totaled. Talk to you next time.
Did you think of us while you were on hiatus?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.